last lecture, I reached this point where we wrote the, I mean, essentially the dynamical equation along the direction of a magnetic field for a particle of mass m and charge q embedded in an electromagnetic field. Okay. So I'd like first now to discuss an application of this kind of formalism. This is standard things that you can find in most of plasma physics book. Problem of mirror, magnetic mirror refraction and the method of confining a plasma using magnetic field. Okay, so let me start off from this equation where I have these two gradient terms that I can re-express in terms of a total time derivative corrected by the advection term, and then you can write the time derivative of this quantity that includes, say, the kinetic energy along the magnetic field, the kinetic energy perpendicular to magnetic field, and this electric energy as a quantity that involves the time derivative of something plus certain quantity times the electric drift that is proportional to the electric field itself. So there's an important special case that is that where say the electromagnetic field is independent of time, and in addition of that, the electric field or transverse electric field is subdominant. In this case, all the right-hand side is negligible, and this equation reduces, this term also is small, and the equation reduces essentially to the conservation of the kinetic energy of the particle. In this context, the conservation of the kinetic energy of the particle together with the conservation of the magnetic moments can be used in order to confine the plasma in the following way. Let us consider, say, a particle moving from a region where the magnetic field is weak to a region where magnetic field is larger. Then the magnetic field increases, and as a consequence of the conservation of the magnetic moment, the transverse velocity should increase too. And since the energy, and when the transverse velocity increases, in order to conserve the kinetic energy, the parallel velocity should decrease. So that's more or less the motion of a particle that gyrates around a magnetic field line. And here, if B reaches large enough values for the longitudinal magnetic field to vanish, then the particle will be reflected to the region where the magnetic field is weaker. And such a situation can be realized as indicated here on this picture, just using a pair of coins that will produce what's called two magnetic mirrors. This kind of process is viewed as a magnetic bottle where the particle can be confined.
Excuse me? Is this demonstration based on invariance?
Yes.
I know that the particle goes back, but just say that the parallel velocity vanishes, but nothing proves that the particle won't stay here and that it will go back.
It go back, I mean.
Yes, I know, but is it in this equation? I'm not sure. The particle could stay at the mirror point.
Well, okay. I schematized a little bit the analysis just to visualize the process. I mean, you can look at this in more detail. And So I just want to show the principle and the fact that longitude and velocity will vanish. And the motion is Hamiltonian. In space, space, you mean?
No, I don't think it's why simulate the motion.
No, it's not enough. It's not enough just to invoke the conservation of the argument. Just want to. Yeah. Yeah, you need to consider the equation of motion. Okay, now this trapping is not perfect in the sense that all the particles will not be trapped by this mechanism and can ask what's the condition of the particle for, what's the condition for particle to be trapped or to escape. I mean, there is a standard argument that let's be minimum, the minimal value of a magnetic field that is present somewhere over there, and let B max, the maximum value of a magnetic field. So the process I was discussing, a particle with transverse velocity V perpendicular zero here, and longitudinal velocity V parallel zero, in the middle plane, we'd have a zero longitudinal value velocity and the transverse velocity V prime perpendicular at the turning point where, say, the field amplitude takes the value V prime. So just write the invariance of the magnetic moment and the conservation of the energy. You immediately get that the ratio between B minimum and B prime is equal to this ratio that you can rewrite as the sine square of the angle, of a pinch angle of the orbit in the weak field region. And essentially the angle that the velocity makes with the magnetic field. And so it's easily seen that particles for which, I mean, particle with a smaller value corresponding to a smaller theta will mirror in regions with higher magnetic field. And so if the pinch angle of a particle is too small, then the needed magnetic field for reflecting the particle will not be attained maybe not be attained if it is larger than the maximum value of the magnetic field that is available. In that case, the particle will not mirror at all. As a consequence, there is a smallest value of the angle theta to confine the particle. So if you say this is the direction of the magnetic field, so this is the direction of B parallel, there will be a cone in the space of particle velocities such that within the cone the particle will not be trapped and the particle outside will be trapped. Now in a realistic plasma you always have some collisions that inject energy from the outer region to the inner region where it can also escape. Okay, that's what I was saying. Now an example, or a natural example of such a situation is the Earth magnetic field that is stronger at the poles and weaker at the equator, and the Earth magnetic field constitute a natural mirror with this parameter that I was defining before here, which is essentially the inverse ratio of the inverse of the square magnetic field of the minimum angle, is rather long. So in such a situation, we'd have an oscillation of the particles between the two mirror points. And it's in fact possible to define in that case a second invariant that is called the longitudinal invariant. I do not plan to discuss in detail this problem. It's discussed for, we can find a discussion of the adiabatic invariant in a rather detailed way in the book by Notchov, a celebrated book published in 63, where the problem is addressed. In a general way, we can say the number of adiabatic invariants of a system is determined by the number of periodicity. For example, if I consider the case where the magnetic field is nowhere large enough to reflect the particle, then the particle will display only a periodic duration about the magnetic field line, but no other periodicity. In that case, the only adiabatic invariant will be the magnetic moment. In contrast, when a particle is trapped and oscillates between two mirrors, there is this ergon invariant I was speaking about that is associated to the parallel motion. And it can be even a third invariant when the particle that oscillates between mirrors is drift from one magnetic field line to another or rotate repeatedly around a closed surface. Such a situation is in fact illustrated by missing a transparency, the celebrated Van Allen radiation belt. Let's see. Okay. You can see here the motion of the particle. Okay. So I was saying that a natural example of plasma confinement are the Van Allen-Kelsen belts. There are in fact two such belts, and they are constituted by torii of charged particles around the Earth that are trapped by the Earth-fighting field. That's strange. Such particles possess the free above periodicity, the duration around the magnetic field line. Some of these particles are trapped between the mirror points. The typical times of these motions are given over there. I mean, the duration is rather fast, typically thousands of times per second. The oscillation between the north and south mirror points, it's typically tenth of second. But there is also a drift, which is some kind of motion from one magnetic field line to another specific line, and the particle rotates around the Earth. The typical time of rotation is of order of a few minutes. I mean, the drift is different for the ions and the electrons, and when you look from the North Pole, you see that the ions rotate clockwise, while the electrons rotate counterclockwise, and as a consequence of that, a ring current is created and circulates clockwise around the Earth when viewed from north. You can see here typical motion made by a particle. Okay, it's in addition to the duration that is not represented by there, you have this oscillation between north and south, and on top of that you have this rotation due to the drift.
The 1/10 of a second is the bounds between like north and south.
Yeah.
It's a very short time for particles to move electrons to kind of traverse that kind of distance in that short time, including reversal of motion.
Well, I'm not an expert on that. I mean, I found that on the calls by Phil Patrick. That's probably to be checked. But the number he gave just to illustrate.
Electrons can usually get to 20%
of the speed
of light.
You say?
The electrons can usually get to 50% or 20% of the light. Oh. They are fine. In the light, I went there, the electrons are relatively stiff. They have a few net energy, maybe electrons. But if I can give some more information, the Van Allen are not very dense, and they are rather close to the Earth.
Yeah, there's a distinction between the two Van Allen belts, essentially. Yeah, okay, so that's what I more mentioned. Okay, thank you. I mentioned it there that, the ring current usually produces small contribution at the level of magnetic field observed on the surface of the Earth. However, magnetic storms can significantly increase the number of charged particles within the other Van Allen belt, and as a consequence of that, produce sharp increase in the ring currents and the corresponding decrease of the Earth equatorial magnetic field. And I have some data that I plot here, where you can see here a significant variation of the magnetic field that took place during a magnetic storm. I mean, this is the 1st March of 1989, where it produces a serious interference in the electrical power grids and evil problems with the electric distribution system in the region of Quebec. Okay. So, Let me come back to the dynamics of a particle I was considering before. It's possible to rewrite a little bit more in a rather different way the dynamical equations by introducing the Clebsch variables that enables one to write the magnetic field as the cross product of gradient alpha and gradient beta. Alpha and beta are the Clebsch variable. I introduced this notation already this morning. It's easily seen that if such a scalar such a representation exists, then B is zero divergence, has a zero divergence. And from the fact that B and grad alpha are orthogonal and B and grad beta are also orthogonal, the variables alpha and beta are constant along the magnetic field lines. And in fact, you can characterize a magnetic field line by fixing the Clebsch variables alpha and beta. If you consider the transformation from the real, I mean, from the physical variables to the coordinates defined by the Clebsch variables and the coordinate along the magnetic field line, the Jacobian of this transformation is given over, and since grad F is the unit vector in the direction of the magnetic field, then the Jacobian of the transformation is just the amplitude of the magnetic field. And so the element d alpha d beta is just the element of flux, in the sense that if you consider a surface skirting the magnetic field line that is parameterized by alpha and beta, then d alpha d beta will be a flux through the corresponding element of area. Now, these variables alpha and beta are not defined in a unique way. You can, there's a way to define such a couple in the proceeding as indicated on this line. Let us consider a parametrization of a surface S that is transverse to magnetic field lines and extend this parameterization along the magnetic field lines by prescribing the conservation of alpha and beta primes along the magnetic field line. Okay, so now let us consider the vector product of a magnetic field with this quantity, grad alpha cross grad beta prime. Just expand and you obtain this. Since beta prime is conserved along the magnetic line, this term is zero, and this term is also zero since alpha is preserved along the magnetic field line. So we get that this vector product is zero. Or in other words, B will be parallel of grad alpha cross grad beta prime. So it will, you can write it as grad alpha grad cross grad beta prime times the scalar function J, G. Now, from the fact that the magnetic field is divergence-less, you can write that zero is, just take the divergence of that, you rewrite it this way or that way. So you get that B cross B scalar gradient G is zero, or in other words, G is constant along the magnetic field line, and is thus a function of alpha and beta prime. Now, if you choose beta in such a way that d beta over d beta prime, so you define beta by this condition, d beta over d beta prime equal G, then if you define B as grad alpha cross d beta prime grad beta prime, this is J, I mean, this is just the definition I use of a verb. Then you define the grad alpha grad cross grad beta, and you have proved that there is indeed a coupled alpha beta such that you can write the electric field, the magnetic field, as this cross product. Now, after we have defined the variables alpha and beta at a given instant of time, you can characterize them at a later time just by prescribing that they are transported by the velocity u. Indeed, you check that if you prescribe these conditions, then the product cross alpha grad alpha cross grad beta will satisfy the same equation as the equation satisfied by the magnetic field. And so, since you have an identity between the magnetic field and cross alpha and cross identity of the between the magnetic field and cross alpha grad alpha cross grad beta at time zero, your unicity, I mean, the uniqueness of the evolution equation, which we describe that the equality will remain true for all time. Okay. It's possible to use these Clebsch variables to get an Hamiltonian representation of the motion of the particle in an electromagnetic field in this limit, the Geising center limit. If instead of the arc length S along the magnetic field line, we introduce another variable sigma that is transported also at the velocity capital U, I remind you that U is the electric drift, E cross B divided by B square, then you can make the change of variable and define the derivative of sigma with respect to the arc length coordinate. This quantity key satisfied this equation, and since grad sigma is key times the unit vector along the magnetic field, you can rewrite an equation giving the evolution of key. When you plug all that in the equation for the longitudinal velocity, you get this equation. I mean, starting from that, you do the substitution and you express the time derivative of the longitudinal velocity with this term that involves the variable key. Now, you separate. Here I have a derivative where the advection is done by the velocity u. Here the advection is done both by the velocity u and also the longitudinal velocity. So you just correct and rewrite the time derivative here, where the advection is done by the electric field, with this corrective term. So you have here two terms that are the same type. You can put them together. Define this variable P, that is essentially the longitudinal velocity normalized by this factor K and the mass. And you rewrite the equation of motion in this form that describes the motion of a guiding center along the magnetic field line. Okay, so now you essentially get the Hamiltonian description. On a magnetic field line, you write the time derivative of a variable P as the derivative with respect to sigma of a quantity that appears to be an Hamiltonian. And you have here the conjugate variable, sigma, that is satisfied, sigma dot equal ddp of the same quantity, in fact. And so you have, finally, the guiding central equations written in an Hamiltonian form. Getting the equation in a Hamiltonian form is very convenient when we want to move from the motion of an individual particle to the motion of a collection of particles. Indeed, just by using the Liouville theorem, you can get the equation governing the guiding central distribution function in this form, that you can rewrite in this form. And now, if you have various kind of various species of particles, then you have to write an equation for the distribution of each species. Okay. So I have obtained here the equation governing the distribution function of a guiding center, starting from an individual particle, writing a dynamical equation for the guiding center, and then turning to the statistics by writing the equation for the distribution functions. Another procedure that should lead to the same result was explicited by Kreutzfeldt, for example, in his review paper of 83, that consists in starting from the standard Vlasov equation. I mean, this is for, say, we are considering each species separately. So just write the Vlasov equation. This is the velocity, electric field, magnetic field. And now we concentrate on the variation of the distribution functions associated to the large scale variations, typically with frequency that are low compared to the zero frequency of the particles, and special scales that are large compared to the Larmor radius. And we are looking for an asymptotic expansion where the small-scale dynamics is averaged out. To do this asymptotics, we essentially assume that both the time scale and the length scale, both parallel and perpendicular to the local magnetic field of order epsilon minus 1. So I assume that I only have slow variation in time and large scales, both along the magnetic field and transverse to the magnetic field. And as I already mentioned, this kind of limits is a special case or the more general geotropic ordering that will be discussed later today. Okay, so we have a Vlasov equation. We have a Vlasov equation over there. We are doing this scaling of the time variable and the space variable, so the derivatives are small. So in this limit, the dominant terms is the last term. And so just expand the distribution function, the power of epsilon, I mean, here, say F0 plus F1 plus Fn, Fn is of order epsilon n, to leading order, the equation is dominated by this term. Now it's convenient to rewrite the velocity of individual particles as the electric drift plus the longitudinal velocity plus something that will correspond to the zero, the velocity of a zero motion. Okay, it's easy to check that when you express the electric field plus the velocity cross magnetic field, the transverse magnetic field cancelled out if you introduce this velocity V prime. And so to leading order, you can rewrite the Vlasov equation in this form. At this step, it's usual to introduce the so-called velocity cylindrical coordinates by writing V prime as a vector with two components in the transverse directions E2 and E3, and the components are V perpendicular cosinus phi and V perpendicular sinus phi. These define the real angle phi. And then you can rewrite the gradient with respect to velocity in terms of these variables, V perpendicular and the zero angle phi. The interesting point is that when you use these variables, then this operator over there reduces to, say, up to a factor B, it essentially reduces to the derivative with respect to the zero angle phi. And so, to leading order, you only have this equation. Now, as I will already seen, we have to assume that the longitudinal component of the electric field is small in order to prevent the fast acceleration of particles, and so it's required if you wish to have a distribution function that decreases at infinity. In the velocity space. So this term will be subdominant, and so that the only term remaining is this term. And so you get that to leading order, the derivative with respect to the zero angle of the leading order term in the expansion of a distribution function is zero. In other words, to leading order, the distribution function is independent of the zero angle. In other words, radially symmetric in the velocity space with respect to the longitudinal velocity. So we can rewrite it in term, I mean, we can define the distribution function, can rewrite it in terms of the longitudinal velocity and the transverse velocity. But instead of a transverse velocity, it may be convenient to introduce this variable W that is just V perpendicular square divided by 2. So that's what we get at the leading order. Except that F is invariant by rotation with respect to the parallel velocity. We know nothing else. F naught is not determined at this level of the analysis. In fact, to determine F naught, we have to go at next order in the expansion. When you go to the next order in the expansion, we have we consider the next order F1, I mean, we have the second term in the expansion of the distribution function. The time derivative, the derivative with respect to the zero angle times this coefficient, that is essentially the inverse zero frequency. I'm sorry, that in fact the real frequency is equal in the right-hand side the terms that involves F naught. Now, F1 is periodic in phi, so when you integrate on the angle this phi, this quantity, the left-hand side, you obtain zero. And as a consequence, for this equation to be solvable, you have to impose that the integral from 0 to 2 pi of the right-hand side is also 0. And that gives you an equation for F naught. Now, you have to do a few transformations on this equation in order to make things more explicit. Well, it's convenient to work, instead of working with f naught of x vt, it's convenient to work with the distribution function expressed in terms of not only the longitudinal velocity, but it's the same, but instead of a transverse velocity, you introduce this w, that is v perpendicular square over 2. But when you do that, this is prime. V perpendicular, you have V is the velocity of a particle is the electric drift U plus V parallel B plus V prime. And I write V prime is V perpendicular cosine C E2 plus V perpendicular sine phi E3. Okay? So, when you do such a transformation, U is a function of space and time. And so is the longitudinal vector along the magnetic field. So, when you you make this change of variable, you have to take into account this dependency. And so, for example, when you consider the time derivative of f naught, it's the time derivative of a new distribution function corrected by the fact that w is time dependent and so is v parallel. And so, you can express what is the time derivative of W, v prime times the time derivative of v prime, and v prime, v is time independent, so only the contribution of u and the contribution of this term contribute, and you can express it, I mean, just substitute. Same thing for the longitudinal component. And by doing that, you can express the first term in the solubility condition in this form. When you consider the second term, you can proceed directly, I mean, that's a simple term. Then you have to express the term that involves the special gradient of f naught, where the special gradient of f naught is expressed in terms of a gradient of a new distribution function, again corrected by the influence of the space dependency of W and V parallel. And so you have to compute these terms, the same kind of arguments. I mean, here it's V is repeated there, W is expressed, W is there. Okay, you take a gradient of W, you have V prime here, and this is the time derivative of V prime, expressed this way. You make the substitution, take into account that some terms in this expansion is zero. I mean, you have essentially, I mean, when you take a term that is this term, for example, times these terms, times v prime is zero, just because of the axis symmetry. So the only contributions that remain are those coming from v prime that is there. You have here this contribution times v prime that is repeated there. So, well, now it's trivial. I mean, you have just the integral, of course, it's cosine square phi, that gives you a factor of 1/2, and the same thing with the sine. And you conclude that this integral is obtained that way. Next term is computed here. same arguments. And finally, you rewrite the solvability condition in this form in terms of the distribution function expressed in terms of W and V parallel. Okay, here you have these complicated parentheses that you can reformulate. So this is this term. This term involves. Yeah, just look at the different terms and put them together. I mean, you see the here you have u dot dtb. Here you have other terms that you can put together and rewrite all these parentheses in the simpler form. Now here you just use that capital U and B hat are orthogonal, so you can replace the first term by the opposite of B dot du dt. Furthermore, you can express here that W d over W is expressed in terms of V perpendicular, D over D perpendicular, and you rewrite finally the equation in this form. Or, if you introduce the magnetic moment, you replace the derivative with respect to V perpendicular by the derivative with respect to mu, and do the correction that has to be done, and you have the equation of this form. Now, here you have an equation that is an hyperbolic equation, and you can consider the characteristics of this equation. And when you consider the characteristics of the equation, what you have here you have a term that is dd mu of f naught. So all this quantity should be d mu dt. But mu is an adiabatic invariant. So this term should be zero. And so you can drop it in this equation. And only the first term, the second term, and the last term remain in the equation. Now you can a little bit modify the equation just by using the fact that the divergence of B is zero to replace the term B divergence of a unit vector by a term that is the gradient along the magnetic field of the magnetic field amplitude, which is done over there. And you get this equation for the leading order of a distribution function. Now you can, so we have changed the coordinates in the velocity space, in the sense that instead of using the physical velocity, we are using the longitudinal velocity and this variable W that is defined from the, say, the gyrotropic velocity. We now can change the coordinate system in the physical space, relatively to the position, in the sense that instead of using the variable x, y, z, we shall use the coordinates defined by the Clebsch variables, and this variable sigma I have defined previously. All these variables are transported by the electric drift. And so now, instead of distribution function involving x, y, z mu be parallel in time, we have a distribution function involving the Clebsch variables, sigma, the magnetic moment that is constant for each particle, and the longitudinal velocity in addition to time. When you do this transformation, you have to adjust the time derivative of the distribution function and also the space derivatives. This enables to rewrite the leading order of a distribution function as in this form. That is equivalent to the equation we obtained from the Hamiltonian representation of the motion of an individual particle just by doing a few change of variables in order to introduce the relevant the conjugate variable p and sigma. Okay. Maybe I shall stop here and. Well, perfect. It's free, right? So, yeah. Well, I need. I'm not sure it will speak in full hour. I mean, can I just. Yeah, let's make a break of 10 minutes. Okay. Qui sont a priori indépendantes.
Qui sont formellement indépendantes, mais qui partent des mêmes hypothèses.
Oui, bien sûr.
Et qui aboutissent au même.
Oui, un coup tu fais l'asymptotique sur l'équation dynamique et tu écris la relation de distribution, l'équation pour la distribution après, ou alors tu écris d'abord l'équation de Vlasov et tu fais l'asymptotique sur l'équation de Vlasov. C'est-à-dire que tu fais commuter l'asymptote, le fait.
Mais en fait, Vlasov, c'est un trompe-l'œil, puisque de toute façon, tu n'as pas de rétroaction des particules sur le champ.
Si, c'est couplé. C'est couplé. Non.
Eux et B sont couplés par Maxwell.
C'est couplé par Maxwell, mais ça ne dérange pas dans l'analyse, si tu veux.
Attends, ça j'avais complètement raté.
J'ai pas touché à.
Le B qui apparaît là.
A priori, ils peuvent dépendre de Maxwell.
Ils font.
Oui.
Il n'y a pas d'hypothèse
sur eux. La seule chose que j'ai utilisée.
C'est des grandes échelles.
J'ai uniquement fait une asymptotique long wave. J'ai pas bricolé les équations de Maxwell qu'il faut ajuster, mais bon. Donc tu peux l'utiliser en régime non linéaire. La rétroaction se présente.
Tu vois, au départ, je voyais pas de film. Sauf d'un point de vue télé-culturel, parce que c'est bien d'avoir plusieurs points de vue. Voilà. Mais je ne voyais pas ce que ton deuxième point de vue apportait en termes de résultats bruts par rapport au premier. Mais effectivement, ce n'est pas automatique. L'énoncé, numéro 2, n'est pas vraiment équivalent au numéro 1.
C'est ça que j'en reviens sur la valeur de lien entre les deux énoncés.
C'est
pas équivalent, effectivement. Il y en a un, c'est là, c'est avant, c'était pour une particule.
C'est une particule, non. C'est une